Coming at you in this short week of Thanksgiving, I've got Mike Irvine in the office. Mike.
Back again. How are we doing?
Ah, it's great. We're doing great. It's Monday, and you just got back from the field.
That's right. I've literally just walked through the door, so good timing on my part. We have just completed wraps on another new Impossible Shot show. So out in our field and did a little shoot, little talk, little shooting, little talking. So this show that we wrapped is a really fun one. Because it's a show where the shooting is secondary. The actual impossible shots in this one are related to reloading.
Wait a minute now. You got to
yes, I know.
You got to give people what they want.
here's what we got. Well, I've got Todd Jarrett in this show.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got the world fast draw champion, Cisco.
Right.
Now,
right.
Todd is going to do a reloading drill with his single stack 1911 where we continue to add magazines on his belt. And he keeps having to shoot and accurately shoot. He's got to hit
right,
the target,
right.
Make a reload, and he has to average less than a second for every shot and reload.
Unbelievable.
And we are going to work all the way around his back. He's going to keep reaching until he runs out of pouches.
You can't let this thing out of the bag.
Oh, I'm not letting anything out of the bag.
I know what sets this apart from other fast reloading, shoot one, reload, shoot one things that have been seen before. I know what sets this apart is the fact that he's doing it with a single stack.
Exactly. And that's a big part of this particular show is we talk about the fact that this is a gun with there's no magwell. There's nothing to help him get the magazine in the gun, and a single stack magazine is as skinny as it gets. So he's got less to hold on to, which actually makes this harder.
That's right. And of course, all of the others who do it live for demonstration purposes, who have done it on the internet in whatever form, it's always a 2011, it's always a double stack, it's always
yes.
a monstrous Dawson Ice Magwell.
Yes.
You know, and I'm not taking anything away from those attempts, those records, or whatever they may be, but I know that this is significantly harder just based on the equipment.
Right, and then we make a big part of that in the show, and we talk about the fact that he has such a narrow window in the bottom of that 1911 to get his magazine slipped up in there and seated right, and with the time restraint of shoot, do it, shoot again in less than a second, it makes this very, very difficult for him. So that's going to be a good one. And the second half of the show, we bring in Cisco, who's our cowboy fast draw guy. This time, he's working with a Model 97 Winchester shotgun, which is brand new for Cisco. We've never seen him use a gun like this anywhere, let alone impossible shots. When he makes appearances on Shooting USA for fast draw matches, he doesn't obviously use a 97 pump. And what will be really interesting for this are the little beeps that go off in my ear on random occasions.
I know, that was all wrong right there. That's what you get, folks, when you hook the phone into the mixer, you know, ahead of a phone-in caller, and then you have somebody call who's not that particular phone-in caller. So.
Well, what's excellent about that is, as we mark this time and we're recording this, when you tell your wife later that you missed a call from her because I was busy, you are in fact busy. Hear that, Leslie? He is quite busy right now.
It's true.
And we will have to call you back. And by we, I mean John, because she doesn't really need to talk to me.
Well, you can call her.
I could.
See where
I could
that
say,
gets
hey.
You. I don't know. But that does lead us to the next piece of information that we have for you in this particular podcast. By overwhelming popularity with regards to the people who have actually done my call to action, and that is go to the internet, go to Facebook, go to shootingusa.com, send us an email, put a post on our pages at telling us what you want to hear, who you want us to hear, who you want us to have on the show, I should say, who you want us to be talking to. And in this case, the overwhelming majority have all said Jerry Michalak. So that's who we've got lined up for you.
That shouldn't be a surprise.
We'll be looking at Jerry here. We'll be talking with Jerry here in about 5 minutes, I should say. Man, that phone call in the middle of all this just has me frazzled. I got to get a lot.
It's okay.
Got to sharpen
okay.
up here.
Well, you know, this is a big guest. It's okay to be a little nervous because it wasn't even close on the internet voting of who people want to talk to.
Yeah.
It was Jerry,
right.
Jerry. Throw in a Julie here, throw in somebody else here. But people yeah. always want to hear from Jerry, which is amazing. And, you know, while we've got just a few minutes to set this up, we're going to talk to Jerry about some of his three-gun competition.
Right.
But you've got something coming up really cool with Jerry.
Do I?
In an upcoming show where we get to quite honestly, be completely educated by the greatest shooter of all time.
Okay, here we go again, me playing Monday role. We just put the wrap on the RockCastleAR15.com Pro-Am show. That's in final edit now and will be delivered to the network. It has an air date in December. Big element in that, though, is the Pro Clinic. And in that Pro Clinic, again, wildly popular, Jerry Michalak.
Of course.
He's got the lion's share of the audience, and as others who were conducting their Pro Clinics concluded, those people migrated over to the Jerry Pro Clinic. And his thing starts with a stage walkthrough and goes into match prep and all of the things that he does at every match he goes to. I mean, he gets all the way down to how he positions guns deep in a stage when he's running through a multi-gun stage and he's going to have to pick up his rifle or his shotgun. He's got a special way that he lays that particular gun in whatever the staging element is. If it's a barrel or a half barrel or whatever, he's thinking about all of these elements. And he's willing to pass that on to the people in his class, which is unbelievably.
Well, that's one of the great things about Jerry is Jerry has never met someone who he wasn't willing to spend the time to teach any and everything.
Right.
Jerry will answer every question that you give him about everything.
Well, you know,
he's an open book.
To an extent, this is something that he sells. You know, I mean, they do training down there in Louisiana, and this is the kind of thing that people pay money to come and get. And in the case of this particular match and the Pro Clinic there, he's willing to give an hour and a half of his time and give away the information that otherwise people would have to pay
for. And you're going to get a sample of that coming up on an upcoming episode of Shooting USA, which is going to be phenomenal television for the audience.
You bet. I had miles and miles of footage of that stuff, and I had to compress it down to the best 3 minutes. And it's a really good 3 minutes. It goes by really quick, especially when you consider the fact that you're going to watch that, and not a single shot is going to be fired. Nobody actually shoots in these Pro Clinics.
Yes.
But it's really, really good stuff. So I'm actually excited to kind of give Jerry a little bit of feedback on that, you know, in working with him on location when we did that piece. It's always fun to tell him after the fact, hey, it worked out great. It looks great. It sounds great. I can't wait for you to see it. So we got a bunch of stuff to talk to him about. A big shoot-off coming up in Las Vegas
right.
for
Jerry's
some big money. And it's not just Jerry that's
yes,
in
right.
it, I'm understanding. So we'll let him get involved in that and give us an idea of what he's working on right now and what he sees in the future. And just like that, we've got the immortal Jerry Michalak on the phone. Jerry, say hello to the people.
How are you guys doing? I'm doing good.
Good
to hear, Jerry.
Well, we've interrupted your afternoon, but I think, like in the setup, I was telling the people who are listening that we've been driving people to our Facebook pages and to the website to give us feedback on what they want to hear us talk about and who they want to hear us talk to, and overwhelmingly, the answer has been Jerry. Get Jerry on the thing. So here we are, Monday, short week ahead of Thanksgiving, and we got Jerry for the people.
Very good. Jerry, what are you doing? How are you spending your week? What have you been up to, buddy?
Well, I've been so busy. This week has just been catch-up around here. I've got home. There's so much to do. It's just been a busy week. Lena was baptized yesterday, so it was quite an event.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Good for her. That's
congratulations.
A big deal.
That's great.
So that was great, and it's just been general chores around the house and just things like that. You know how it is. You've been gone. So I've been gone so much this year. It's just overwhelming how much is to do here. So, but anyway.
Well, that's part of what we want to talk about is you've had a great deal of travel. IDPA Nationals this year, you shot it in one day in less than ideal weather conditions, and that was so that you could get through and head off to, was that it? That was Hungary.
Yes, it was. We went to Debrecen, Hungary, which is about 2.5 hours east of Budapest for the first IPSC World Shotgun Competition. So it's pretty exciting.
How did that go, Jerry? How did everybody do?
Well, I did. I was fifth overall, I think it was, or seventh. I don't remember. we tried to get ammo in country twice, and it didn't happen. So I had to use stuff that was there.
And
it wasn't until the last day of the match that I got everything working well, and then the match was over. So, but Lena shot an excellent match. She is the current ladies standard division world champion.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
That's amazing.
So she also won the shoot-off.
I was able
to win the shoot-off in open, so I was pretty happy with that. But Lena really, she really rose to the occasion and just shot extremely well.
I bet that was a proud dad moment for you.
It was unbelievably good. She was in the moment the whole match. Kenny unfortunately had a match DQ on the first day.
Hmm.
They had a real strange safety rule there by Burns. And anyway, she got DQ'd, so she was able to spend the rest of the week working with Lena, walking through the stages.
To Lena's benefit, I'm sure.
Yeah, unprecedented
it
advantage.
It worked out good.
Yeah. Jerry, that kind of sets up my next question, which is tell us a little bit about what that match is like, because over here we're pretty unfamiliar with a world shotgun match like that. What's it like?
Well, it was, if I remember right, 30 stages. And I think we shot in 4 days, if I remember right. It's pretty busy. The way the IPSC ruling is on stages, you only get a 3-minute walkthrough.
Hmm.
So some of these stages were 35, 38 shots long, and 3 minutes to walk, and you can't take a pencil and paper with you to take notes.
Wow.
Oof, man, that sounds like it's mentally taxing.
It is. And they're fast-paced, and target arrangements were difficult compared to the U.S. standards as far as shotgun shooting was. So it was a totally different mindset. I had to kind of recalibrate, and the walkthroughs are very important, so you had to man up really quick on a short notice. So it's a different mindset when you go there. You have to really prepare yourself to stay focused for a long period of time. That's the difficult part.
Interesting.
Wow.
So, now you shot the open division over there, is that correct?
Yes. Yep.
Tell me about the equipment you use there, and is it similar to or the same as what you use for open division and multigun?
It is. They have a shotgun overall size dimension, which I didn't realize until I was about half a day before leaving. So I had to run down to Brunlaw's shop and take the bandsaw to my recoil pan and cut it almost completely off. My gun was about 3/4 of an inch too long.
Wow.
They have an overall size dimension, which I wasn't aware of until the last day. So I had to cut a bunch of the buttstock off, the recoil pan almost completely off, which really threw the way I mounted the gun off.
Interesting.
And not having I can't tell you how much not having my old ammunition there affected the outcome of the match.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, that's...
We had to get what we could at the last moment, and it was just not good.
Right. Just inconsistencies in power, or didn't want to run the gun?
Well, the inconsistency in the actual quality of the ammunition.
Oh, wow.
So it affected the whole world. The whole U.S. team had a big black eye because of ammunition trouble. So
that's a shame.
That's a shame, yeah.
Well, knowing that ahead of time and knowing that for next time, I know they move this shotgun match around the world. I'm sure some more emphasis will be put next time on making sure ammunition gets where it needs to go.
Yeah, we tried twice to get ammo there, and at the last minute we found out it wasn't there. So you had to pretty much be at the mercy of the range guys and find what you could find to shoot the match with. So it was kind of a brutal environment.
And it's hungry.
Also, it's a different, a lot of dry gun starts.
Yeah.
Which means the shotgun is totally empty.
Wow.
Had, I think, 4 of those in a match, and with a stick-fed gun like mine compared to a box-fed gun, you know, a guy jumps up there with a Sega and puts 20 rounds in it.
In one motion.
It kind of takes a few strokes of the speed loader there to get up to count. So.
Well, that was interesting. That was going to be my next question, is are the magazine-fed guns allowed in the IPSC shotgun competition in the open division? I guess the answer is yes, so...
Yeah, they're pretty much the dominating force there.
Interesting.
So it's I think it should be a different division.
Yeah.
Myself.
Yeah.
But as of now, it's not. So you just have to put up with it and learn how to reload better.
Interesting. Well, what's happened since then? I know I saw you at Steel Challenge in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And
got the Steel Challenge. Yeah.
Had the wheel gun running pretty well down there at that thing.
Yeah. That was kind of a last-minute deal. I had about a day and a half practice for that. It's the least I've ever shot the steel, and I sure didn't need it.
Yeah.
I was rough as a cop going into that into Steel Challenge. So we're shooting down in frostproof, and the way the ranges are set up, it's a little better visually than where it was in Piru, California.
Yeah.
But the sun at 2 o'clock and really shining hard on the targets, and that causes some sighting issues with your red dot. So I needed a day on the range just to calibrate myself to it. After that, it started going pretty good.
Good, yeah, and that's been, by and large, the feedback I've gotten about Frostproof, in particular for Steel Challenges. Everybody likes the way the targets stand out against the background. Everybody likes the fact that it's flat. Everybody likes the fact that there's no dust. So,
yep.
It'll be interesting to see if the shooting community in Florida and the Southeast start to support that match in the same way that the shooting community out in California and Arizona have supported the Steel Challenge for years. Because, as you know, you were there, just like I was, the numbers in attendance were way down.
Yeah, I think it was the end of the year, too.
Yeah. Well, and that's a point. They moved it. You know, they changed the date and moved it into November. So
there were so many competitions this year. By the end of the year, everybody was competitioned out.
Yeah. Well, I know you've got a big one on the horizon, this big shoot-off in Vegas for the big money. You're right in the middle of that. How are you preparing for that? Because it's unique in that you won't be able to use your own guns.
Yeah. Melina is going to be in a shoot-off, and also is Kate. So we've actually trying to mimic a setup here almost exactly what we're going to do there.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're going to do is start putting out different guns and shoot different equipment instead of training with our own guns.
Right.
Just go ahead and cross-train with just about anything we can think of that's different. So,
Jerry, give us an idea kind of how this shoot-off works. What are you guys trying to simulate?
Well, of course, the stress of it, shooting against one another, but also the difference in equipment. Mm-hmm. So if you're comfortable with what you're doing, it's time to change it. So that's why we're going to have probably 3 or 4 different rifles to have available on the line, and then also handguns. Mm-hmm. Have about 4 or 5 different makes and models of different handguns there. So you have to run up to it, hold, and try to adapt yourself to it without having a comfort zone of a previous learning curve.
So do you guys have any idea what the pickup guns will be?
Yeah, we do. We do.
And that's what helps you decide with a 4 or 5 that you need to try and familiarize with.
Yeah, also shooting guns that are other than what the actual shoot-off guns are going to be, something that you might not particularly like to shoot, like a double-action, single-action gun.
Mm-hmm.
So just try to stress yourself in ways that the match is going to stress you, and try to adapt to it in that instant. So that's the secret of it.
I think it's fun. It'd be interesting to know what the others who are involved are and what their mindset is with regard to leading up to this. Because I've talked to a couple of the guys, and some of them are saying, well, there's really no way to get ready for it. There's really no way to train for this unless you go and get the exact same guns with the exact same ammo and blah, 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 blah. It's almost like a cop-out. Compared to the way you and the family are addressing it, and that is, we're going to train with everything that we can possibly get our hands on, and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I want to shoot something that I don't like to shoot. Put you that way.
Okay.
Now, I always try to bring out equipment, even when I train during the year.
Right.
I try to bring something out that I really don't like to shoot, and then learn how to shoot it well. But when you go back to what you do like, you've got that bit of a knowledge with you. It always helps to cross-train. I think one of my abilities to shoot a revolver well carries over into just any handgun I can pick up.
Yeah.
The sighting is different. The sighting equipment changes and the grip angle, but that's something you have to learn to tolerate, and if you make it a weak point, that's what it's going to be, a weak point. So a good competitor shouldn't have a weak point.
Interesting.
That's a very good point. So who in the family is looking the best at adapting to these guns right now? How's everybody doing?
Lena's doing pretty good. I'm surprised she's having some really good moments on the range. I'm surprised how fast she is all of a sudden. She can almost beat me to the box to the next position. So.
Well, I mean, she's got youth on her side.
Yeah, I know. I hate that.
Well, there's no getting around that. I think it's...
Anyway, well, but she's come a long way in the last year. I'm really impressed with her ability to see. And it's one of the big things we're going to work on in the next few weeks is vision technique.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a big vision moment this year before I shot the the USPSA Revolver Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to train Lena in that aspect and give her some vision skills. And I'm thinking just a little bit of coaching and her sharp eyes, it'll, I think it'll pay off really good.
Are we kind of talking about calling your shots? Are we talking about seeing the next target? Are we, what do, give
just,
me...
just general vision skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what separates the good competitor from the other guys, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Is knowing what to look at.
Mm-hmm.
I've, through the years, I've come up with a number of drills that I train with to, you know, to work to that end. So that's what I'm really going to try to get with her in the next week or two and do some vision drills and get her to see what she needs to see when you need to see it. That's the hard part, is to understand it and be able to call it up and then make it happen and then apply it to the targets without stress getting in your way and working against you.
Excellent. Excellent.
Easier said than done.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, of course. And that's, like you said, it separates the good from the great. And she certainly has every advantage. How important do you think her martial arts background is to her shooting? How has that helped her, or has it helped her?
I think the being competitive on any level, doing anything, even if you're playing golf or tiddlywinks or whatever,
right?
It all makes you a better rounded competitor.
Interesting.
So having competed in that aspect, working through her belt brought her the actual experience to compete at other sports. So
outstanding.
So being on the line is being on the line. It doesn't matter what you're doing.
Right.
So you base yourself on an outcome. And she's got a very good mental game, which really surprises me.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually taught me a few things in the last few years. So one of the things I try to do when I work with people is try to feed off of what they have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And add to what they have, and just a good exchange of ideas on the range is what makes a great day on the range what it is.
That's fantastic.
I always try to go there with an open mind and learn one thing, you know. Come out of there with a little bit of knowledge.
That's great. Happy. In the lead-up, I was telling Mike that I have just finished putting together the show from the Rock Castle Pro-Am. And one segment in that particular show has the pro clinics, and I was talking to him about how wildly popular your pro clinic is and how the thing just kept on, and you gathered the rest of the people who had attended other shooters' clinics because their clinics were over and yours was still going, and it was fantastic, and it was, again, to the point you've just made, it was an exchange of ideas.
Right. Yeah. I'm always amazed what I learn from even the most novice of people. It might not be exactly about what I'm doing at the moment. But there's you just keep your eyes open. There's so much to be learned, even from a novice. When he's doing something wrong, you can learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just if you think you know what you're doing, it's over with.
Well, it was an interesting event for me because on the face of it, it looked like Jerry's going to do a stage walkthrough, and this thing will be over and done in 5 minutes. He's going to shoot here. He's going to pick up the gun. He's going to shoot here. He's going to shoot this, and he's going to shoot that. But I found it interesting as I was watching the tape and creating the piece for the audience that you continued your train of thought with regard to not only the stage walkthrough, but what guys should be looking at in stage walkthroughs in general, what guys need to do and not do with regard to how they're making a plan or how they're changing a plan. And then that evolved even further into preparing for the match and caring for your equipment and checking your ammo. It was an ongoing stream of thought that was, I mean, it was just fascinating to watch.
It kind of feeds off itself. When you get people asking questions.
Yep.
I probably learned the most. Well, continuously learn when I do a class. So the more I'm exposed, the more exposure I get to the knowledge, and the more I can catalog it and actually see what I'm weak on. So
well, that's an interesting point, is that you're often doing classes which are expanded versions of this particular pro clinic, which people are paying to come and see. You know, I mean, how often are you doing that kind of stuff?
I've been mostly doing military stuff.
Okay.
I've been so busy doing civilian stuff, but when these Army guys call, I kind of feel like it's almost a duty to go work with them.
That's good.
Don't get me wrong, they pay me good, but the other side of the point is that the guys get a bunch out of it. And if I help one of them just a little bit come back, you know, all my training would be worth it. So,
Jerry, can you give us an idea? Can you give us an idea of who these military guys are you're working with?
Well, they're special forces guys, and they get into the thick of it. So they're looking for speed drills and vision techniques and stuff like that. So that's mainly what I do with them.
Very cool stuff.
What's it like to work with these high-end kind of guys, Jerry?
Well, you appreciate quick what they are where they are. They are very knowledgeable. They're very sharp mentally. So if you feed them a little bit of information, you'll see that much improvement that quick. So it's pretty exciting to give them a little bit of knowledge and watch them run with it. So I'm also learning. It's a learning curve on both sides. So that's a good exchange of ideas.
Fantastic stuff.
Yeah, that's very cool.
New Smith & Wesson product. There's these the core. That's the acronym,
yeah.
Competition Optics
yeah.
Ready.
Yeah.
I understand you've got your hands on some down there. I've been fortunate enough to play around a little bit with the M&P in the 1911. What are your impressions at this point?
Well, it's going to be the thing of the future. You can kind of equate it to the automatic transmission in a car. You know, when automatic first came out, everybody said, well, you don't really need it. It's like when the red dot sights came out back in the 80s, and Jerry Barnhart showed us that we all needed one.
Right. The old burner.
So the technology is getting there to where the ability to make them smaller and more compact and more reliable is starting to really phase in. So I'm thinking the next 5 years, 10 years, if you have a pistol that doesn't have a built-in optics-ready platform, it's not going to sell.
Right. Well, it's interesting that they recognize that niche in the market, because for years guys have been milling slides and creating the footprint for the different red dots, you know, for this slide ride thing. That's been going on for, you know, 4 or 5 years for competition. I think it's interesting that they're addressing it that way, but they're also using taller sights, like taller conventional iron sights, almost to the point where you could co-witness.
Right.
I mean, that's an interesting design feature that they've done with this particular iteration.
Yes, that's one of the backup systems. Should your electronic sight not work?
Right.
You can always go back to metallic sights in a heartbeat. It's like a little red dot on the side of an optics mounted AR platform. You can have either or.
Yep.
It just makes sense when you stop and look at it. This should have been done years ago. But the technology is just catching up with the actual durability and the size of the optics being small enough to put in a host and be compact and durable, and it's the next level.
I think it's cool stuff.
Jerry, we see this very much as a competition thing, but it sounds to me like you're saying this is what we can expect on all handguns in the future. Do you believe that?
It is. You see it in the Army, the military guys, police officers want it. It makes the gun so much more usable, that red dot, because you keep both eyes open. The biggest problem in law enforcement is that the officer has to actually identify his threat. So visually, you have to go downrange and look at him, or hit, or whatever it is. And once you identify the threat, I know most officers never come back to the focal plane of the front sight, and the hit probability is so dismal. Hit ratio in a lot of police departments are less than 10%. So with both eyes open and you have a red dot, you can look at the threat or the target and still be very effective. So that's the difference right there.
That's very cool. I would have never considered those things. So they Smith & Wesson is really leading the charge of the future with this thing.
It is. It's a breakthrough for them. I'd like to see them continue it on and just put it on just about every platform that they manufacture. I think you'll see it on the small concealment guns. If they do it on the little compacts, it would be a great, great asset to the guys.
Yeah, relatively speaking, these companies that are turning out the red dot optics are smaller companies than the big firearms manufacturers like Smith & Wesson, these big monstrous companies. I would be interested to see that if a company the size of Smith & Wesson is willing to address this new technology, at what point do they also address pushing the technology in the red dot optic? When does Smith & Wesson throw some development dollars at making a smaller red dot optic? Or if that even happens, it'll be interesting to see.
It's a wide open market. There's room for improvement on everything you see. And it's just an evolution. You've seen them go from the big, well, this thing used to be 5 and 6 inches long, huge apparatus. Now you see them smaller and smaller, so I'm sure in the future here they'll even get smaller and more. The diode technology is actually starting to catch up. You see some of them now with a battery life of five to eight years.
Huh.
Wow.
You can leave the optic on for 5 to 8 years on one battery.
Not my Seymour.
where do we find those?
Yeah, I love my Seymour dearly, but that dude eats batteries.
That's the diode technology, and that's how far it. What has happened? Some of the companies now have the technology to make that light bulb. It's basically, if you look at it as a light bulb, mm-hmm. if you look at it, say you put a 400 watt bulb, and you have a 1 inch hole that it shines through. Mm-hmm. You're not getting 400 watts worth of quality out of it, but you sure burn a big light. So now they, instead of having a 400 watt bulb, they'll have a micro amp bulb precisely to the size that they needed for the application.
Interesting.
So the old technology, you had a huge light source, mm-hmm. and you just drilled a little orifice to shine enough light that whatever dot size you wanted. So you're running this huge light bulb off of a battery, which you don't really need. Now the technology is there with all the new LEDs and all the other technologies mm-hmm. that they're building. So you can have these really small light sources that use very, very low wattages. It's pretty amazing, the technology right there. And it's coming along even faster than what I can imagine. So I'm thinking another 5 or 10 years, it's going to be the standard small site. Durable five-year battery life would probably be normal. So it'll be good for us older folks.
It'd be interesting to see, that's for sure.
It'll be good for all us folks, Jerry.
I know, it would be. I can actually see that still. Metallic sights are just about a thing of the past. So,
well, that leads me to another question, Jerry, which is what places will we start to see you using a core?
Well, I'm hoping to have it three-gun matches here.
Uh-huh.
I'm working on an open gun. There's some great trigger modifications available for it. The way it comes is good. Of course, aftermarket people are brainstorming how to make it better. So, and a shooter is by virtue a gamer, you know. So you can build a 3-pound trigger. He wants a 3-ounce trigger. So always looking to make it better.
Oh, yeah.
So there's some options out there. Even the standard parts, with just a few minutes worth of work, you can get them down to 3 pounds without any problems. So it's a very shootable platform, I think, with that scope base built into the slide. I had Magnaport quadruport a gun for me. They came out really nice. I like the way it handles. It shoots good, shoots flat. You don't have to put a compensator on the end. So
neat.
It'll fit pretty much a standard holster.
So cut through the slide and then just port it out the top of the barrel, huh?
Yep. Pretty good system of doing things. And it's very cost effective and it's very compact. Again, it's like the little red dot sights. You don't have to put a comp on it to get that compensation effect.
So very cool.
It's a good way of doing it.
Very cool. Well, we bounced around the topic earlier in the podcast, the magazine fed shotgun. So now that we're back to 3-gun competition, you're building up a core pistol. Any chance we're going to see you grab a hold of one of these mag fed shotguns, either the Akdal or Sega?
No, I'm pretty much Mosberg through and through right now.
Yeah, that was a dumb question. Any chance Mosberg's going to make a mag fed shotgun?
Jerry, I wish you could have seen his face just then.
Yeah. Yeah, open mouth, insert foot.
No, it's a good question. I've always believed that there's a huge market for a good box-fed shotgun. Everything I see out there, it's like the red dot sites of 20 years ago. It's not really there. It's a workable flat platform when it's working, and when it's not, you got to hold on. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
My 930 runs so good that I'd be hard pressed to bet it on something that might run 95% of the time.
Yep.
So, you know. So I'm. That's the way the shotgun evolution is going right now. I think it's going to be box fed in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see why not.
Well, it'll be fun to see, you know, the design and manufacturing tolerances that Mossberg or any of the other American manufacturers have applied to that particular design. I think the sky's the limit.
Yeah, there's a wide open market for a really high quality box fed shotgun.
Yep.
So I'll put that out there for grabs.
There you go.
Some manufacturer needs to fill that void. And I think it would also have some law enforcement military application.
Definitely.
A shotgun is just like a revolver. When you're shooting in a competition, it's always empty.
Yep. Somehow I knew we'd get to that.
It's a pretty low capacity firearm. So to keep it running and having a good time, you got to learn how to load it really good. So the shotgun needs a magazine if it's going to evolve to the next level. So.
Well, I think we're starting. I think we're starting the conversation. Maybe we'll see the Mossberg JMB for box fed coming down the line. What do you think, Jerry?
That would be a great thing. I would stamp my name on it in a heartbeat. So,
wow,
that would be pretty good.
Hey, Hey, Mike,
hey,
I think you're onto something, buddy.
We're onto something. See how this works? We're making new product just like that.
Fantastic. But you know, there's one more piece of the puzzle when it comes to your multi-gun package, and that's your rifle. Anything new on that front? What's going on with the rifle?
Well, I've been trying to get Smith & Wesson to do a competition-grade AR for a number of years. And I think I'm going to finally get an audience with them toward the end of the year. They're kind of pressuring them one more time. So if the public out there would like a good competition AR, you need to call Smith & Wesson and say, look, listen to Jerry. Let him build a gun for you.
There's a call to action.
They're right
like
there.
That.
You heard it, folks. There it is.
Put the pressure on them. I've got some ideas. But what's happening right now in the gun industry is everybody is building everything they can possibly make now. So getting new products pushed through the R&D and the engineering phases right now are really hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how that goes.
Yeah.
There's a market for it.
No doubt. I mean, it's guys are out there running and gunning. Talk about your gun specifically, the one you've used for competition this year. What are you going to do differently with it going forward?
I might change the handguard on it. I'm looking at another handguard. But other than that, everything I have right now is pretty good. I can't find a fault with it, other than I need to learn to shoot it better. But but I can't really say there's anything on the platform that I'm using now that I would drastically change. So I've got the Vortex 1x6 on it.
What's Vortex, Jerry, what are you looking at for a different handguard? What's wanting you to change that?
I just think there's some other features I could put to use. I like to have some flat spots on it. It's a round handguard, but you never put it on a round surface. It's always something flat or a wall or something. So if I had some sides on it, I think it would be a little bit more stable in the off positions, a little bit better when you use props or you use tables or something to that effect.
Yeah.
But that's about the only thing I've changed.
Interesting. Now, earlier in the year we were talking, and you were expressing to me the fact that you're kind of having some issues with your hands. Where do we stand with that? What are we doing to kind of correct that or remedy that, if anything?
Well, I'm doing some stretching exercises, try to keep my old fingers going. But other than that, kind of laying off of it a little bit this year was kind of a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the least I've shot handgun in 25 years, I know. I've actually had some really good results for his performances on the range. So I'm kind of laying back. I'm not hitting it as hard on the range on the handguns. I'm going to train harder with the long gun.
Mm-hmm.
getting ready for next year. But other than that, my hands seem to keep going. So I just won't abuse them as much. So I'm a little bit smarter when I go practice. I won't shoot quite as much, and I'll shoot more 22s and stuff of that nature, so I don't beat them up as quick.
Makes sense. And so, what kind of exercise separate from shooting are you doing in terms of training, or do you do any kind of exercise like that?
Well, the only thing I'm going to add, do a little bit of running.
There you go.
Getting ready for this. So I'm doing a little sprinting there. I'm doing on the treadmill stuff, so just trying to get my cardio back up a little bit. In the past, I'm pretty lazy. It's hard to find time to exercise when you're on the road all the time, so it's a good excuse not to exercise. So I've shot so many competitions, I've been fortunate that was my exercise, so.
That works out well.
Yeah.
Outstanding stuff. Well, have you had any opportunity? I know you've been busy. I know you've been playing catch up around the house. Any opportunity to get any hunt in? Any hunt time? Anything like that?
No, I passed up a deer hunt this week. I had a hunt planned in Montana. I passed it up. So stick around the house for Thanksgiving. I haven't been home for Thanksgiving in quite some time. So got to do the home chores first.
I know what you mean.
But I'm going to probably make a deer hunt and go to Texas and shoot a few hogs and stuff and unwind a little bit.
That's a good way to do it.
You bet.
So I want to try out that new 300 Whisper on them and see how that works.
Yes, sir. We got one of those in-house, too, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, we have one of our editors has been using it regularly lately, and he loves it. He's having a lot of success with that cartridge.
Okay. That's what I want to try. If it works good on something.
Should be fun. All right.
Well Jerry, one last piece of business before we get you out of here, buddy, and that is that we need to congratulate you on your USPSA achievement, Lifetime Award winner, you and Rob Latham. That's some pretty good company. What was that like, guy?
Yeah, that was quite a surprise. It was quite an honor to get called up on the stage with Rob. I can remember shooting against Rob man-on-man back in the 80s at the Florida Derby, of all places. It was a pretty poorly run match, but I remember.
All right.
I think everybody kind of remember it as a what not to do at a match. But the expectations were great, but the actual – anyway, I got to shoot against Rob on a man-on-man competition at the end. I was shooting, to tell you how long ago this was, I was shooting a Davis cross draw holster with a Model 28 Smith & Wesson.
Wow. So, very Perry Como of you.
This is old stuff, man. This was
very 21 Jump Street. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, so I did make it. I won Top Revolver, and I got to shoot against Rob, and he barely beat me. I remember that really well, and it was just, and then when I got called to the stage, you know, to accept my Lifetime Achievement Award, what an honor to be standing there with him. He's one of the greatest handgun competitors that ever was or ever will be. So, quite an honor.
Very neat.
Quite an honor.
Neat stuff.
Very cool. Congratulations, Jerry. That's incredible.
Well, thank you.
Outstanding. Well, that's pretty much it. That's all I've got for you. Look forward to seeing you in Vegas at SHOT Show, and we'll see how that big shoot-off shakes down. There's big money on the line.
Yep, we'll catch you down the road, Jerry. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Take care.
Thanks.
And there you have it. A couple minutes. I should say more than a couple minutes with Jerry. It's always fun to talk to him.
That was more like 30 minutes, bro. That's
just
way
that fast? Look at that.
Yeah.
Ah, time flies when you're having fun.
Well, and that's, you know, here's the thing. Here's the route. We went and got Jerry because you said you wanted
to
hear us talk to Jerry. Jerry will do it again with us. We're planning live podcast from the SHOT Show floor. We're going to do one in the Smith & Wesson booth in the afternoons during SHOT Show. We'll get Jerry in person. The conversation will be much different when we're face-to-face with him. It always is.
That's right. And it'll also be much different because we're going to be recording these from the SHOT Show floor, which is going to have the buzz and everything going on from that environment. It's going to create a different sort of feel for this. And
that's true.
That's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
And how about that idea of an American-made magazine-fed shotgun?
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. I did not know he was that positive on seeing that, especially in the future, the way he did. And I thought that was a very interesting thing that he said.
The bottom line is it is an advantage in the open division of multi-gun or any shotgun competition to be able to, in one motion, load as many as 12 shots. I mean, just can't be done otherwise unless you're running an X-rail. But the flexibility isn't there if you're in the X-rail. So, you know, Jerry's identified it as there's a need in the market for it. What then needs to happen is a company with the manufacturing tolerances of an American company, like a Mossberg or a Remington or mm-hmm. something to mm-hmm. that effect, one of those companies do the R&D and build the gun.
Yeah,
I mean, it would definitely so.
I must say, though, I have to think the most intriguing thing to me about our conversation with Jerry was him talking about the Smith & Wesson Core.
Yeah,
and
cool?
His belief that we are going to be a culture of all optic handguns in the future. And I hadn't considered some of the applications, especially when he was describing the way it would benefit a cop and things like that. That was very interesting to hear. You know, like I said, we think about it as competition, but he's got it in everyone's back pocket for all usage.
Right, right. And it's just a matter of the technology in the red dot optics continuing to evolve. It's evolved now to a point where it's feasible to mount them on the slide and they're durable enough to hold up. What's the iteration next and next after that going to look like and be capable
That's
of?
That's right.
And now that these big companies, or in this case Smith & Wesson, the big company, is offering the optics-ready platforms already done, then now the optics companies and big companies like Smith & Wesson can take the optics to the next level.
That's right.
Because the market's there.
Yes.
It's fantastic. I think it's very cool. That's
very, very exciting
stuff.
Go to the Smith & Wesson website and look at the Core. It's very you'll notice the differences right away. It's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Neat stuff. Well, that pretty much wraps it up for our short week podcast. It is Thanksgiving.
That's right. It is a short week. What do you got planned, John? What are you and the family doing?
I'm here in town. I've got we'll have the whole group together, and we're going to be playing it. We're going to be playing it cool around the house. I've got my fingers crossed that my brother makes it in town, and
I'll
be able to see him. Haven't seen him since they redeployed, and so they're back in country, and I'll be happy to see him face to face. I've talked to him on the phone a couple times, but it's always good to just, you know, lay eyes on him, especially after he's been overseas. So
that's, yeah, absolutely.
Looking
very good
forward
for you
to
guys.
That stuff. And that's about the extent of it, man.
Very good. That'll be fun. That'll
what
be
about
fun.
You? You're headed out of town.
I'm heading out of town. This is one of my favorite weeks of the year. I'm on my way, leaving tomorrow night to meet my pops for a opening weekend of our duck season. We're going to be in the Missouri bottoms chasing ducks. My very understanding wife will be traveling to visit her family, so I get to go play the duck man. So I'm looking forward to it. I am gassed. I am so excited.
Well, it'll be interesting to know how the flocks are moving this year. I've seen a lot of geese staying down here, and normally they're on up out of here. And even, you know, we've already had a hard freeze here in Tennessee, and they're still hanging around in groups of 20 and 30.
Yep, we've had a lot of unusual weather, unusually warm in the Midwest and in the upper Midwest, but lots of high winds here or there, and at some point the genetics are going to kick in and that gets them moving. So we'll see. You know that my phone rings all day, every day this time of year with people all over the country and into Canada calling me with what they're seeing. So as long as there's enough ducks in southern Missouri to make it interesting for a couple days, we'll be happy, and we'll see when the weather comes later in the year what happens then.
Outstanding, man. I think that's very cool. Very cool stuff.
Very good times.
Well, that's it. We'll be looking for another guest for next week. So, again, that offer stands. Get on the website.
That's right.
Get on Facebook pages. Tell me what you want to hear us talking about. Tell us who you want to hear us talking to. If I don't have the number, I'll be sure to
get
it.
We'll find it. That's right.
There you go.
Very good. Have a good Thanksgiving,
that's
everybody.
It. Happy Thanksgiving.